Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jane Pearl joins us now, financial parenting expert and co-author of Kids, Wealth, and Consequences. We're going to talk about kids' allowances, and I'd like to hear from you all. You can text at 87870 a year, 87870. How much a year or a month or week or whatever it is you give your kids an allowance, or do you do that? Do you just kind of say, get what you want within reason, and I'll pay for it? Jane, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Well, Jane, thank you. Jane Pearl, financial parenting expert, co-author of Kids, Wealth, and Consequences, says here that the average kid's allowance is almost $10 a week, which would come out, of course, to about $500 a year. What is your book about, Kids, Wealth, and Consequences?
The book is based on financial values that will help kids be successful, not just financially, but in life. And I'm happy to go through those values if you would like.
That's why you're here, Jane.
Okay. The first one is that you need to teach your kids how to understand the difference between wants and needs. We all have wants, and that's fine. But we need to know the difference. So one of the things I did to teach that to my child when he was growing up was we played the gotcha game. And if one of us heard the other say, I need something that was really a want, we had to put a quarter in a jar. And then we would either donate that money, you know, when it filled up, or we would do something special every other time.
So you would get something you need or something you wanted?
Something we wanted.
Okay. So the gotcha game, give me an example of how that would go.
Okay, so he overheard me say when I spilled something on my favorite red silk blouse, I need a new red silk blouse. I had to put a quarter in the jar. I don't need it. I wanted it.
Well, I guess. I mean, what would you do in absence of the red blouse?
If I had just said I want a new red blouse, I wouldn't have had to put that quarter in. It's knowing the difference. It's not judging the want. It's knowing the difference.
But you really wouldn't need that red blouse, would you not?
No. Why would I need another red blouse? I have other blouses, other colors.
Well, because you got stuff that goes with red, don't you?
I have a red sweater. I have a white sweater. Or a white silk blouse.
All right. Here's your
It's technically not a need. A need is a roof over your head, food in your belly, medical care, education.
All right. Here's your damn quarter. Let's move on.
Okay.
So the gotcha game, keep going, please.
Okay. The second financial value is learning how to make trade-offs. You can have this or you can have that, but you can't always have both. And it's important to be able to do that because that's what life is like. So if we're at the store and we're doing back-to-school shopping, I have a whole system for that, but if we haven't done that system and your kid wants, you know, a very expensive pair of jeans and a very expensive pair of new sneakers, you can say, well, you can have this one on sale or you can have that, you know, if that's in your budget even, or you can have that one that's not on sale, but you can't always do both, or you have to choose one or the other.
And for example, if I'm your kid and I was going to come up to you and I'm going to say, Mom, I see some people have $90,000 cars, really nice cars in front of junky houses, or I see people that have nice houses and have really junky cars, the lesson there would be, and correct me if I'm wrong, well, some people like one thing and some people like the other, but that would be a lesson in trade-offs, not necessarily what would be perhaps the better trade-off, or would you even go in into that? Because my dad always taught me, buy as much house as you can buy, as little car as you need.
Yeah, and I think, that, again, that, the parents have their own values of, that are individual, but there are some basic things that I'm outlining. But yeah, so without getting into a judgment about whether a car is a fancy car is better than a big house.
And that's just an example. It could be right. A nice pair of shoes opposed to, you know what I'm saying.
Exactly. Yeah. So the third financial trade-off, financial value, is developing a healthy skepticism about media and advertising and peer pressure. So one way to discuss this is to simply watch television with them and look at the ads. And when you spot somebody talking really fast or some tiny print scrolling quickly across the screen, you explain those are disclosed things that the producer of that product has to disclose by law, but they don't really want you to know it because it's negative stuff. Mm-hmm. But the basic premise of an ad is to get you to pay for things you don't necessarily want or need, and to, you know, so that you will give them your money, your hard-earned money, and that you know, the messages behind some of the ads are very disturbing. Like if you just smell right or have the right electronics or the best toys, that you will be popular and loved. That's a very shallow way to go through life, and it might not jive with the parents' regular values. So developing that skepticism, remembering a product that you bought that looked great on commercial or advertisement, and when you got home, it wasn't at all the way it was projected, and how disappointing that was. So those are some ways to do that. And the fourth financial value is to teach your children to tell themselves no. And that means that you have to give them some control over money, which is allowance, which I consider to be learning capital. And the reason is because if they come to you for something and you are constantly saying no, maybe you're going through a tough financial time yourself, or you just don't think you don't value that, you may feel that you're depriving your kids of something they really want. If you say yes a lot, you may be indulging them. So it's almost a no-win situation. But if you put some money in their control and have them have to live within those means to make the decisions for the things they want and need, then they're learning how to make those trade-offs.
Yeah, I remember being 7 years old like it was yesterday, and realizing, having gone to the toy store, that the tanks and the army men or whatever it was I was getting, that I was just putting them on a table, and they didn't have all of the sand and the little fake mountains and so forth. You know how they display them on a TV when, in fact, all you're getting is plastic men in a box.
Right. We went through that with a car wash. The box had all these cars on the front, and in teeny print, which I didn't see, it said cars not included. And on television, the ad, you know, showed it going through there. When we got home and there were no cars, it was really disappointing. And I did decide to go and get some cars for him to use it, because it was, you know, I considered myself to be the responsible one in that equation, and I should have known. But, you know, telling the kids no is really not as powerful. You're just going to fuel an argument or a meltdown, which you don't want to do. You want to put them in control.
Right, we take a break. We come back. I want to talk to you about the history of this and how, you know, if you look at, we hear that the average American, I think, would have a hard time coming up with $400 cash. Do kids learn by what they see, no matter what you tell them? And do a lot of parents maybe go to need to read your book to start all over again? And are we turning out kids that are able to maintain their own finances, or at least discipline themselves enough? 920, if you have a comment or text, you can send it to us at 870-870. We'd love to hear how you handle allowance with your kids, or how it was handled with you. 920, Tommy Tucker, back in a flash, WWL. It is 9:26. Having an interesting conversation with Jane Pearl, financial parenting expert and co-author of Kids, Wealth, and Consequences. And we've already covered some ground in terms of teaching kids about money and value, right? Jane, would
That's
be a good
right.
way to put it? About
yeah.
determining your wants from your needs, about trade-offs, and I know the old economic thing is guns or butter, but if you have this, you can't have that, and some things, I guess, there are, when you get to be an adult, you have to pay your bills. Well, let me jump in here with that, Jane, before I go through the other two, which are skepticism and telling yourself no. You say not judgmental, but at some point you have to, I guess, explain to them about priorities?
Yes. And when I say not getting judgmental, I mean, I don't want to be judgmental about your values, about what you feel is more important in terms of what to buy and how much to save. But
wait, you're talking about, I'm confused now. You're talking about me personally or about the child?
It's not for me to tell another parent what they should think, you know, is more important, a fancy car or...
Well, no, I understand that. But as far as, I just meant that as an example. But as far as the kid goes...
The kid goes, the parent has the right to say, these are the values of this household, which is really important, it really comes into very sharp focus if the parents are separated or divorced. And one parent is making more money and having lavish gifts and vacations, and the other one doesn't, and one gives a very high allowance, and one can't afford that. And then, you know, it's really important to say, well, in this household, these are the values. And kids can understand that.
Well, wait, let me jump in here, because, you know what, 50% of marriages end in divorce.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not uncommon for the parent with the money to try to buy the love, the attention of the child with the things like you're talking about, the gifts, the lavish trips, et cetera, where the other parent is a single dad or mom working, just trying to make a place to live and furnish a home, pay the bills, et cetera. So in terms of co-parenting, I would think the parents at some point need to get together and decide on a budget for what they're going to give the kid or kids.
If that would only work that way,
yeah.
Wouldn't be divorced. But
that's a great, Jane, that's a great point. It's a little late to get this kind of feedback, but that's a great point.
Well, you know, the point is that it would be great if the parents could sit down and civilly say, let's approach it this way. But often there's, in some cases, especially when there's not a custodial parent, and they feel maybe they have to make up for the lack of time they spend with more, you know, doing fancier things and giving, you know, more lavish gifts. It's just, you're just not going to be on the same page. And sometimes some parents use their kids as pawns. So it's just really, kids can understand that in each household, there are specific rules that might be different from the other parents, and that they have to just accept that. And a parent has to be strong and consistent and clear about what those rules are.
So just in terms like in of, any other, go ahead, yeah. I'm sorry, Jane.
No, just like in any other parenting topic, you have to be clear and consistent, and you know, for that to be effective.
So, if in terms of family values, and I guess this goes to trade-offs, if in this house, before we engage in any extravagances, we make sure that we have a budget, we make sure that we like the financial people say, pay ourselves, we pay our obligations, our debts, and then if anything's left over in this household, that's how we do it, as opposed to maybe some families say, look, you only live once, we'll charge it on a credit card, then we'll pay a little bit at a time. How do you instill the financial, if not values, philosophy of the parents to the child? Or is it more do what I say, not what I do? Explain all of that.
Sure. I think it's a really good question and a very important one. First of all, a lot of parents feel guilty because they may not be the best money managers and they don't feel they're good examples, or they may feel that they're kind of ignorant on the topic. But there are many ways to approach it. And one is to just learn with them. There are many websites, books like mine,
which is a need, by the way, Jane, not a want, to clarify.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
But the point is that you can, you know, there's so many ways to teach your kids. And one of the things that parents should know that should alleviate a lot of guilt or insecurity about their own practices and knowledge is that just sitting down and talking with your kids about money will have a huge impact on their financial literacy. And this has been, many, many different organizations have done surveys of teens, and they have found that those parents who just talk once or twice a month. Their kids will score much higher on financial literacy tests than those whose parents don't talk at all about it. And that could mean just going to the, you know, around doing errands at the ATM. You know, you have a young kid in the car. They just see you pushing buttons and out come $20 bills. Well, you say, I can only take out what I have put in the bank to hold for me when I want the money. And it keeps it safe, and it allows me to have money when I may not have taken enough for something. That's an opportunity to talk about money and the decisions you make and how things work. When you're shopping, you're at the checkout line, you can say, well, no, you can't have things in the checkout line. They're there for you to nag me and convince me to pay for things we don't need. But if we flip coupons before we go shopping, and coupons for things we will buy normally anyway, not just for anything, and you hold them and you take them out and you have some part in that activity, you get to keep that money. And then not at the checkout line, because that's not allowed, you can keep that in your savings to save up for something that you care about.
We're going to talk about, I guess, age appropriateness when we come back. Believe it or not, I didn't know what a budget was and the concept of budgeting, because I didn't grow up in a, certainly not a rich household or anything, but my parents provided for us very, very well. They did without a lot of things, but it was a very modest kind of thing, right? So I had no concept about the idea of a budget, because we would just not live extravagantly, but just pay the expenses, and there was no doubt as to what was going to be paid and what was going to come in. But at what point do you explain to a kid about a budget? And I would like to ask the adults here, you can text into 870-870, do you live with a budget or not, or do you look at it as, I'm going to save everything I can and only get what I need? The problem with that, I would guess, Jane, is that the definition of need depends on your impulses, right?
It depends on your impulses. It depends on how consciously you even think about it. And this is an invitation to do that and to say, let's redefine that a little bit. And to be clear and to discuss this stuff with your kids. I mean, when it's time to buy a new car, do you just show up with a brand new car or a new used car? Are you leasing? Are you buying it outright? Are you financing it? Did you shop for that loan? Did you take your kids there to watch you pick out? Do they know what you value in a car? Is it, you know, the safety features, the color, some of the fancy electronic things? What do you value, and can you afford it, or are you going to go into debt? Do you have a nice down payment? Do your kids hear you haggling with the salesperson? These are really important opportunities to teach your kids and discuss money with your kids.
Let me take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about age appropriateness and allowances, and should the kids have to work for it? I know there are a lot of, I've heard from bankers who have surgeons and so forth that have graduated from college, medical school. They don't know the basics of finance or any of that, how important it is to ingrain that into your child and the importance of an allowance as it relates to that. Jane Pearl is our guest, financial parenting expert, co-author of Kids, Wealth, and Consequences. We'll pick it up here. We'll come back. You got any questions? Text them in 870-870. 9:35, and it's time for traffic here on WWL. It is 9:40, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jane Pearl. We saw a story from CBS News about the average kid's allowance, almost $10 a week or $500 a year. But to me, the most important part of being a parent, not just an allowance, Jane, is teaching a kid, getting them ready to leave the nest and be able to fly on their own, right? But they need to know how finances work and the value of money before they do that. And my kid's 23 now, but I told this story before. When she was like maybe 6 or 7, we'd go out to Slappy McCrappy's and have one of these hamburgers and the spinach dip and these kind of things. And I would show her the bill and I'd say, look, now the three of us ate and that cost $60. And then you leave a tip, blah, blah, blah. And now we have the money for this. I'm not saying that we're doing anything real special here. Just so you understand, what we just had to eat cost $60. And as you determine what it is that you want to do for a living, and I guess it goes to trade-offs, if you want to teach, that can be a very rewarding job in terms of you feel good about yourself at the end of the day, but maybe you can't go to Europe because you're not making enough money. On the other hand, if you want to go into finance, maybe you're not really helping people. You can make a lot of money. So it seems to me that worked out with her very well. Would that be a model for other parents or not necessarily?
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. That was a very good lesson. Because kids are not always conscious of what their parents are spending for them. But the best way for them to be conscious of the value of a dollar is for them to have some dollars to play with. When I say play with, so you say $10 is the average allowance. A lot of parents give a dollar for each year of the kid's age. Some will give, decide based on doing chores or their grades or their behavior. You know, don't if you went all week without hitting your brother, you know, you'll get your allowance. I'm not a big fan of any of those things. And let me just have a little disclaimer. You know your kids. I don't know your kids. Mm-hmm. So if they have...
Are you talking about a reward for not doing something bad as opposed to a chore list? That's what you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
But even the chores. I'm a big fan of chores, but I'm not a big fan of tying them to allowance.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, because when I started doing this, this was all trial and error for me. My son had to clean the kitty litter. He had to take the trash out and some other chores. If he didn't do it, you know, we'd have an argument. I'll do it later.
Age, Jane, if I might ask, are you talking about here?
Let's just say he was 10.
Okay.
Okay. And so, you know, then we'd have these arguments. And so finally I said, we're decoupling this. You know, you have to do these things. And if he didn't do it, then when it was time for him to get to soccer practice or to have a play date or something, I would say, you know, I don't really feel like taking you. I just don't feel like getting up and driving you. And he learned very quickly that I would feel like it as soon as he felt like finishing his chores. So that was like sort of like matching the consequence to the infraction. Okay. If I were to say, you know, you're not going to get your allowance, he might decide, well, then just dock me. I don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not winning that game, you know.
Well, and so, when I'm hearing that, Jane, I'm thinking, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but there are things in life that you need to do for which you receive no compensation, and I guess that's an important lesson of maybe not tying chores to.
Yes.
I don't know. Okay.
Yeah, and as a family, however big or small that family is, you have to work together. I mean, that's ideally. And a healthy family helps each other. And so we are all citizens of this household and we all have some responsibilities and some of them are just not about money. Not everything is about money. And that's a very important lesson right there. But so they have chores they have to do. If they don't do them, there are other consequences. And then if they, with their grades, you have two kids, one gets A's without studying, one works hard and gets B's. How do you compensate them, fairly with allowance? It sets up too many problems. And with behavior, they have to learn how to have impulse control and behave well on their own, with other consequences. So what is allowance about? It's about financial responsibility. So some parents say, I can't afford to give my kid allowance, but you're paying for things anyway. Let's just say your kid is taking school lunch. What is that, like $3 a day today? I don't know. So that's $15 a week. If that were all,
I don't know how much it costs, but I can tell you we're having meatloaf today, Jane. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Count me in. All right. Spoon me out of portion.
Love meatloaf Friday. All right.
If you say, okay, $15 you have for school lunch. And if you choose to make us a lunch the night before, so there's no craziness in the morning, and remember to bring it, then you can keep that $3. Hmm. And so you're giving your kids trade-offs. You're giving them financial responsibilities, decision-making, control, thinking about what they want versus what they need. They need to eat, but they have different ways that they could accomplish that. Now, my kid always forgot his school lunch. And I live only a mile away from his school, so I used to run over. I was a freelance writer. I could do that. And at some point I said, this is not working, because we'd have arguments on the way home. And one day he called, and it was true. I had a phone interview. I couldn't leave. I said, you know, you're going to be really hungry, and I'm really sorry. I can't bring it to you, but I'll have a special snack when you get home. He never forgot his lunch again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the consequences. So the idea is you're giving kids a discrete amount of money. You start out with more things on the need side than the want side, but you can put in a little bit for wants. You can put a little bit in for saving. You can put in a little bit for charitable giving. And you'll find that, you know, if you're doing it for mostly for their needs, you're not spending more money than you normally would.
And we're kind of mixing in or folding in budgeting there, are we not? And how involved should the parent be? Should it be, here's your $10, spend it on whatever you want, or here's your $10, however, we're going to put 10% of it, or we're going to put $1 in a savings account. We have to be responsible, so we're going to put 50 cents of it in a basket, or however you want to divide it up.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important part of it, or that the parent, I hate to say control the allowance, but kind of teaches the kid, which is a de facto budget, right?
It is. And so you start simple. So you say school lunches, and maybe some, if your kids have a sport or a hobby, like my son is actually a working musician now. You know, so in those days it was guitar strings and guitar picks and lessons. And so I paid for the lessons, but he had to, from his allowance, pay for all the accessories. If he wanted to buy a CD of a favorite band, in those days we didn't have Spotify or, you know, the other music services, then, you know, he would have to save up for that. And so you help them, you make a list of things they have to now pay for. You know, as they're successful, and if they want more money, you say, well, then you're going to have to be responsible for more things, and you help them strategize along the way. Now, if there's something that they want you're not going to buy them, and let's just say it's $100, you tell them if you save this amount per week, it'll take you this many weeks to earn that money. If, you know, so you can buy that product. If you save, and you may say, and for every dollar you put in, I'll put 25 cents or 50 cents or maybe even a dollar if it's something you really value yourself, like something educational. But if they start taking money out, you stop matching it until they've replaced it. And then it's like a 401k plan.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
So it's just a strategy for helping them understand that they have control. They can make a goal, and they can fail and experience the consequences, which is so important, because you want them to make a $5 mistake or a $100 mistake instead of a $5,000 or $100,000 mistake when they're older. So you have to let them fail.
I'm getting some that's an excellent point, and I don't know that that's just related to finances. So many parents today are afraid to let their kids fail, and I was probably bad at that as well, but because there wasn't a lot of failing, but it's hard to do, isn't it?
It is. It's very hard. But think about self-esteem, which is very important. And many parents think that by telling their kids that everything they do is wonderful, and perfect, and, you know, they're little stars, that's self-esteem. That's not the way it is.
Well, no, because not everybody's an athlete, right, Jane? So
right.
You're setting your kid up to fail if you push them in that direction and they have no athletic ability. It's phony esteem if you think you're doing that, correct?
Exactly. But if you let them fail and then you help them strategize how to do it better and they succeed, that's self-esteem. I'll give you an example. My son, aged 11, I had bought him his first guitar when he was 6 and started classical guitar lessons. Then he started he wanted to play more jazzy and bluesy stuff, and so he was a major Elvis fanatic since age 3.
So really? Figure.
Yeah, kids are crazy. Some kids are obsessed with trucks or, you know, baseball or something. My kid was obsessed with Elvis. But so I paid for half of that guitar, and he had to save up for the other half. And then he won an electric guitar when he was 11. Well, I said, you're on your own. Well, he saved and he saved and he saved. And a year and a half into it, he had the money. He bought the guitar and the amp. He factored that in. And he got home and he threw himself on the bed and he was weeping. And I thought maybe it was buyer's remorse. He got the wrong guitar, whatever. He said, no, I'm just so amazed that I finally did it. Now,
wow.
If I could have afforded to buy the guitar for him from the get-go, I would have robbed him of that accomplishment. That's where self-esteem comes from.
Jane, I think that's a good note to end on. I appreciate your time. The book is available at all the usual outlets, Kids, Wealth, and Consequences. Jane Pearl, a financial parenting expert.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.